Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case is 2020-608, the State of Ohio versus CSX Transportation Incorporated. For the appellant, we have Mr. Tauber. You'll have to unmute yourself, sir.
Try that again. Apologize. Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the court. Andrew Tauber on behalf of petitioner CSX Transportation. I intend to reserve 5 minutes of my time. Every appellate system outside Ohio to have considered the issue has concluded that federal law preempts anti-blocking statutes such as RC 5589.21. Courts across the country are unanimous that such statutes are preempted by ICTA, the FRSA, or both. Indeed, it simply does not matter whether RC 5589.21 is analyzed under ICTA or the FRSA. Either way, it is preempted. Indeed, because the law is so clear, I would like to begin, before addressing the law more specifically, by addressing two practical implications, or the practical implications of this case for both the railroads and the communities that they serve. First, I would like to reassure the court that contrary to what the state and the AG suggest, holding RC 5589.21 preempted would not result in railroads blocking crossings indefinitely and without impunity. To start, it simply wouldn't happen. Railroads make money by moving trains, not by parking them. And if block crossings did become a problem in a particular locale, the Surface Transportation Board, the STB, exercising its authority under ICTA, could take action as it has in the past. For example, with respect to a congested corridor in the Chicago area where it took steps to address blocked crossings. Those actions by the STB were cited by the Indiana Supreme Court when it held that its state's anti-blocking statute was preempted. And not only could the STB take action as it has in the past, so too could the FRA, which is currently gathering data on blocked crossings. Simply put, the federal regulators would not allow railroads to gratuitously block crossings.
What's the timing on a response by the Surface Transportation Board or the FRA to address a problem that presents itself repeatedly?
You know, it's an administrative proceeding. I don't have an exact timeline, Your Honor, but you know, it certainly can be months or a year, depending on the process and the procedures involved. Just like any administrative hearing that you would imagine, Your Honor. But in addition to the economic reality where railroads simply won't block crossings unless they have to, and the regulatory reality that federal regulators won't allow railroads to do so, I think it's very important on the practical side of things to also keep in mind why it is that Congress determined that preemption of state regulation is necessary for railroad operations, which are the quintessential form of interstate commerce. In Ohio alone, there are 5,187 miles of track and 5,000.
This is all fine, but I guess I'd like to talk a little bit about the law.
Certainly, Your Honor.
In the case. One of the things that the Attorney General says that if we accept your reading of the what they call the Termination Act, it would mean that there's no authority for the Secretary to do anything under the Railroad Safety Act. Why don't you address that?
Certainly, Your Honor. I mean, it's simply not the case. Courts have time and again held state laws that relate to safety issues preempted under ICTA, and notwithstanding that long history,
I understand that, but explain to me how your reading doesn't swallow up the entire Railroad Safety Act.
There is no reason why the two laws cannot exist simultaneously. The Attorney General takes the position that you have to choose between one or the other. Our position is that both laws exist simultaneously, and the court has to consider both. In some instances, a state law might be preempted by neither statute. In other instances, it might be preempted by one rather than the other. And yet other instances, such as here, the state regulation can be preempted by both. And, you know, Your Honor, notwithstanding the fact that courts have, as I say, repeatedly held safety statutes preempted by ICTA, such as, for example, the D.C. Circuit holding that the Delaware idling statute was preempted by ICTA, notwithstanding the health motivations for that, the FRA has continued to issue workplace safety regulations and other regulations regarding the actual operation of trains without...
What about you? Just help me with your argument. I understand other cases have, courts have decided cases, but we're not bound by mistakes other courts may or may not have made. So help me understand, based on the language of the two statutes, where each applies.
Certainly. The FRSA is clearly directed at how railroads operate their trains. So it talks about the engineering of locomotives, the engineering of cars, the engineering of tracks, the safety training and all that goes to the day-to-day question of how do trains operate, how are trains operated by railroads. The ICTA, by contrast, goes to the railroad's right to operate trains on tracks and its obligation to provide services to customers as common carriers. And I think it's important to note that ICTA imposes an obligation on CSX, like other railroads, to provide reasonably requested services such as those requested at the Honda plant. And so when we're talking about the right to operate on tracks where the STB has approved the usage of the tracks, ICTA is the starting point. When we're talking about how does the train actually operate, what type of engine does it have, what type of safety devices on the trains, then the FRSA is the starting point for one's discussion. And there's some, again, some places where FRSA alone will speak to an issue, other situations where ICTA alone will speak to the issue, yet other issues which both statutes speak to. And there's absolutely no reason to feel the need to choose between the two. I would point this court to the decision of the Supreme Court of the state of Washington that we cite in our briefs. There, the court analyzed that state's anti-blocking statute under both federal statutes and concluded that it was preempted by both. Or I would point the court to the comparatively recent decision out of Oklahoma, where the federal district court found that that state's anti-blocking statute was preempted by ICTA. And there it said, addressing specifically the argument that the AG has raised here, that these two statutes are not mutually exclusive. And it didn't then reach the FRSA argument simply because it already found the statute preempted under ICTA and found no need to do so. But again, these statutes are overlapping and they have existed in harmony with each other now for decades and there has been no parade of horribles that one sees from the unanimous set of court decisions holding statutes like this to be preempted under ICTA. It's not as if in the states where the anti-blocking statutes have been struck down under ICTA, that suddenly there's a free-for-all. It's not the situation that the FRA has found it impossible to continue regulating railroad safety. The statutes exist harmoniously and the two federal regulators work harmoniously. And the mere fact that there is overlap at the margins in certain cases shouldn't be a cause for concern. And if I can turn then to ICTA in the first instance, Your Honor, in Girard, this court recognized that ICTA grants the STB exclusive jurisdiction over the operation of industrial and switching tracts and categorically preempts state or local regulation of matters directly regulated by the STB, such as the operation of rail lines. By its express terms, RC 5589.21 regulates trains that are, I'm quoting now, engaged in switching and loading operations. So on its face, RC 5589.21 goes to the heart of what ICTA is designed, ICTA addresses and prevents, namely states interfering with the ability of railroads to operate on rail lines that the STB has authorized those railroads to use. And moreover,
isn't the state statute a safety statute?
It addresses the legislators announced its purpose of facilitating the movement of vehicles across railroad tracks. So it's I think it was the court in Oklahoma or Washington says it addresses local safety, not railroad safety as such.
So would we need to look then, rather than a categorical preemption, at an as applied? And if that's the case, doesn't it need to go back to the trial court, since the trial court made sweeping legal generalizations when it issued its decision?
Well, two things to that, Your Honor. I wish to remind the court that the trial court issued its decision on both bases. It found both ICTA preemption, which addressed primarily, but it also found that the statute was preempted by the FRSA. So the trial court has already found that this statute is preempted by the FRSA. The intermediate appellate court, for whatever reason, decided not to address the FRSA. But as to categorical versus implied preemption, Your Honor, every court, literally every single court without exception that has looked at anti-blocking statutes under ICTA has concluded that they are categorically preempted, and one doesn't even need to engage in an as-applied analysis, precisely because anti-blocking statutes go to the heart of railroad operations, namely, can a railroad conduct switching operations at an industrial customer?
Except the railroad here, so the problem seems to be that it's spending an hour loading and unloading goods at the Honda plant. And I think it's a little different from switching operations.
That is switching operations, Your Honor. The reason it is there for an hour is because it is removing cars from the train to leave at the plant so that the plant can then take the contents of those cars and use it in the process, and then reassemble the train, picking up cars that had been left there previously and moving on. That is switching. And there is simply no way that one can conduct switching activities of that sort within 5 minutes. It's impossible to do. If CSX or other railroads were unable to engage in the switching operations that they're obligated to provide under ICTA as common carriers, they'd be prevented from using their rail lines as permitted by the STB. And that is why they are categorically preempted, such statutes.
So why can't they all live in harmony? As Justice Bruner just said, there is a safety provision in the federal statutes that allows, when there are local conditions of safety, to allow locales to write statutes to protect those interests. So when you're blocking the train track and you say it's switching, why isn't that just not your defense? The state has declared a law that says this is all for safety purposes, allowing emergency vehicles to conduct their business. Why isn't that just not a defense? You get a ticket, you come in and say, we were at the Honda plant switching. Here's my proof of switching. Why don't they all work in harmony?
But first of all, there's absolutely no dispute that that's what was going on here, Your Honor. And that is our defense. We've been cited 5 times and we are defending a criminal case. That's how we are before Your Honors. That's exactly what we did. We interposed.
But what you're asking for is us to say, to declare Ohio law preempted by the federal statute, even though the federal statutes give local jurisdictions some group of rights when it comes to safety issues, to adopt legislation.
But Congress very, very narrowly constrained the state's ability to do so. First of all, a state may adopt or enforce a safety regulation related to railroad safety only if the FRA has not already adopted regulations covering the subject matter. And here, as we argue, and as every court to have considered the issue has concluded, the FRA has adopted regulations covering the subject of trains moving through crossings, or alternatively, as the AG would like to have it, the issue of trains stopped in crossings.
So what regulations have to deal with trains stopped at crossings?
There are two, Your Honor. There is first the air brake testing regulations, which compel the railroad to remain stopped after engaging in switching operations until such time as it has completed mandatory air brake testing. That itself requires stoppage of certain amount of time. Remember, these trains are 1 to 2 miles long, typically.
It doesn't require stoppage in any particular place, though. It doesn't, require stoppage in front of a crossing.
I mean, not inherent.
That seems a pretty indirect regulation to say that the secretary is regulated directly in this area when the only regulation you can point to is something that deals with train starting.
No, Your Honor. Well, first of all, it's not the only regulation we point to. We also point to
what's the other one?
The speed regulation, Your Honor. So if a train is compelled to clear a crossing within 5 minutes, it must move at a certain speed given its length. There's a mathematical relationship between the length of the train and how fast it must move in order to clear that crossing within 5 minutes.
Now, do you think that's realistic? Let's be honest. If your train is moving and it's not completely stopped, you really think that someone's going to cite you because you're going through a crossing at a particular speed based on regulation for that crossing? I mean, what we're really talking about is your train is stopping and you're not going anywhere. It's not about whether you're still moving at a slower rate of speed.
No, the statute is clear, Your Honor. If our train stops for any reason within our control and explicitly including for reasons of switching, then we must clear the crossing within 5 minutes, an absolute requirement. That it must be cleared within 5 minutes. So
we're talking about two different things. So let's parse that out. Stopping at the Honda plant, switching out cars, I'll use your terms. You've now crossed the tracks and everyone's waiting for you to clear. You take an hour or two to unload, switch. That's different than what you just said. In response to Justice DeWine, he said, what's the second statute? And what you say is we would violate the statute if our train is moving at a slow speed in order to adhere to the regulations of speed for certain particular crossings. But I don't read the Ohio statute as saying you can be cited if you're moving.
No,
it's literally if you're stopped.
But no, Your Honor, the trigger is stopping. Once we've stopped, the law is triggered. And then we must clear the crossing within 5 minutes. So it's not that we would be cited subsequently for moving at a slow pace, it's rather we would be cited for not having cleared the crossing within the allotted 5 minutes. And in order to do that, to clear the crossing within 5 minutes, we might very well have to increase the rate of speed to a point where it would violate the speed regulations imposed by the FRA. And I want to go back to the air brake testing regulations, Your Honor, because I mean, every court to look at this has agreed that the air brake testing regulations govern when a train must remain stopped. The FRA insists that trains remain stopped until certain tests have been conducted after switching.
And that's something different, right? You're not going to, there's not a time regulation that every 8 hours the train stops and you check your air brakes. It's when you have originated a stop to switch offload, and then you're getting ready to start again, you must test the air brakes to ensure that the brakes are bled and that they will operate safely.
Correct, Your Honor. But that takes time.
That takes time. So what we're really back to is air brake testing is after you have originated a stop, like at the Honda plant. It's not as you're moving through the crossing guards. Going back to Chief Justice O'Connor's question, let's be honest, railway travel has occurred since the mid-1820s. The federal government has taken over railway travel since, 1917, 1920. Yet to date, there's no statute that protects local communities for what we're really talking about, is the fact that if you block these rail crossings and perhaps in a community, those are their only pathways to get across for emergency vehicles. So local communities are just at the whim of you and profit.
That, Your Honor, that's certainly not true. Absolutely not true. First of all, the reality on the ground is there are close by crossings so that if one crossing is blocked, the nearby crossing can be accessed. So if in an extreme case, an emergency vehicle had to get from one side of the Bear Swamp Road crossing to the other, and the crossing was blocked, it would take 7 minutes to get to the other side using the nearest crossing. If it started originally from the dispatch point, it's an only additional 4 minutes. So there are alternatives. Moreover,
Council,
there are regulatory—
Council, you've used your time, but I want to ask one question.
Yes.
Is there communication between the railroad and the community when something like this is going to happen so that safety forces, et cetera, are on notice?
Yes, Your Honor. We proactively coordinate with the Sheriff's Department so they know our general operations. When it becomes clear to us that a planned blockage is going to last longer than anticipated, we immediately communicate that to the Sheriff's Department. The Sheriff's Department has an app that allows citizens of the area to know when blockages are anticipated or are occurring, so citizens do know. And Maureen, I also want to point out, in addition to our proactive coordination with the Sheriff's Department, we also have spent money to install supplemental air compressors at the nearby crossing so that we can load the air pressure quicker in the trains so that we can minimize the duration of the crossings. We take this the community's concerns quite seriously, to say
Thank
nothing
you.
Of that. Thank you.
Thank
Honor.
You. Your time is up. We will go now, I think, first to, is it Ms. Hobbs will argue first?
Yes. Thank you, Chief Justice, and may it please the court. My name is Samantha Hobbs, and I'm an assistant Union County prosecutor here on behalf of the state of Ohio. I'm joined today by my colleague from the Attorney General's office, Mr. Zachary Keller, with whom I hope to split about half of my time today. Your Honors, I'd first like to start by addressing Chief Justice's question about the length of time that it takes the FRA to respond. I don't have a specific length of time, but I can say, admittedly outside the record, because we're at the motion to dismiss phase, that since September of 2019, the Union County Sheriff's Department alone, not every agency in Union County, specifically the Sheriff's Department, has made 198 complaints to the FRA about the blocked crossings, and nothing has been done. So it seems that the answer is at least a year and a half before the FRA will take action when there is a consistently blocked crossing.
Council, what's the alternative? In this situation, what's the alternative? What can Honda and CSX, what can they do?
Chief Justice, I'm not sure. I don't know enough about the way that the railroad functions to know what the other options are, whether that's, I know other places, there have been solutions for building bridges or taking more proactive steps. I know Mr. Tauber related to the court that CSX is very proactive and the Sheriff's Department is always aware of when the blockings are gonna happen, but that has not been the experience related to me. That a lot of times they don't know that this.
Can Councilor piggyback on that then? So we don't know if there's a solution that could eradicate the problem of the crossings for safety reasons and other reasons for the people in the community, and yet still allow businesses such as Honda to, you know, continue to function. I would venture to say that the continued work in that community is also important.
Yes, that's true. I don't know the exact solution, but I know that the solution cannot be to just find the statute preempted and allow the train to stop as long as it wanted.
Council, isn't the solution what Mr. Tauber suggested, or didn't suggest, but stated, there's an alternative route. Vehicles such as safety vehicles, if dispatched and being apprised of the blockage at this particular crossing, can use an alternate route in order to accomplish their duties, and citizens the same way. That I mean, if the train was blocking all egress and ingress on the roads of the community, that's one thing. But what I'm hearing is there's alternates that are reasonably available. Is that, do you find that to be the case?
Certainly when law enforcement or police and fire have advanced notice, they could take an alternate route, but it's the problem of when they don't have notice and they get there and they find that the train is blocked and they have to take another route. Plus, the statute applies to the entire state. So although in Union County at the specific Bear Swamp crossing, there may be an alternative route when law enforcement knows about it, I don't know that that is the case for all of the rural communities throughout the state of Ohio who have been affected by this issue. And to Mr. Tauber's point that because of business, they wouldn't want to stop for a very long time, if the court looks at the legislative history and the discussions that took place when the legislature was enacting 5589.21, there was large discussion about a train up in the northern part of the state that stopped and blocked a crossing for 2 full days. So the state's not trying to be alarmist here, and it's not to suggest that they would stop for 2 full days every single time if the court preempts the statute, but blocked crossings are a problem and they present an issue, and they shouldn't be preempted for a number of reasons.
With the Honda plant, is there a spur or a deadline where the cars can be delivered and the empty ones picked up? Have you ever been out there?
I have not been out there, Your Honor. I have been in that direction, but I've never taken a look at the track specifically. I could certainly speak to someone and brief that further for the court.
No, I just want to know if there are spurs or deadlines out there to facilitate the movement and the unloading.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what the precise setup of the tracks is out there. But even still, we would ask the court to find that the statute is not preempted. The first reason for that is the presumption against preemption. I think presumption is probably a bit of a strong word, but the courts have consistently held, including the United States Supreme Court, that when police powers are involved, the court should be hesitant before finding those powers preempted.
Here, let me ask you this. These penalties involved with the anti-blocking statutes, they're supposed to have an effect. They're supposed to like to deter behavior. So if CSX is fined, but they can go into court and present a defense because they're obligated to do what they're doing, how does that resolve the issue? How does the utility of this law, how does it come to fruition if they have a complete defense because they're obligated to do what they're doing?
Well, if they have a complete defense, I would say it still has some deterrent effect because they have to come into court and they have to present the defense, but it also provides penalties for those situations wherein they don't have a complete defense and there's not a good valid reason for them to be stopped. Furthermore, the statute 5589.21 doesn't allow for just any operation and anything outside of their control to be a complete defense. There is a lot of conduct that's covered by 5589.21. But even if there's not utility, the statute still is not preempted by the federal law. Under the Federal Rail Safety Act, it's clear in that express preemption that we fall into the first safe harbor here. This is a safety statute. It's related to rail safety. There are safety concerns caused by the train, and the federal government has failed to pass any regulation about the blocked crossings. Now, I know that Mr. Tauber had two main arguments and pointed to two federal regulations, that being the air brake testing and the speed regulation. As to the air brake testing, there's nothing, as the court pointed out, that requires them to stop in any certain specific place. So there's nothing on the record to suggest that it's impossible for them to comply with both the air brake testing rules and 5589.21. Now, as to the speed regulation, that is an argument that has been made in many courts. And Mr. Tauber himself quoted the line originating out of City of Plymouth and the CSX case, that I think has been misused by a lot of courts, because it talks about the fact that speed necessarily has a mathematical calculation. And many courts in evaluating anti-blocking statutes have cited that specific quote from that case. But it's important to look at the origination of that quote, because in that case, the statute was not just the anti-blocking like it is in this case. It also had language that said if the court is traveling over 10 miles an hour, it can only block a crossing for 7 minutes. Clearly, in that case, there is a speed component. Clearly, in that case, the statute would be preempted because there is a speed regulation. But in this case, there is not that speed component. There is only the anti-blocking statute that a train cannot park on our roadway and block Ohioans' access to the roads and to the emergency services. And I see I'm at more than half my time, so I will ask the court to affirm the third district, and I will yield to Mr. Keller. Thank you.
Ms. Hobbs, just one question.
Sure.
Your colleague on the other side seems to really want to lean heavily on ICTA, but it seems to me that you mentioned police powers and there are safety aspects to 5589.21. Wouldn't the FRSA be the more appropriate federal statute to be looking at here?
Yes, Your Honor, we believe it would. The Supreme Court back in 1921, the United States Supreme Court in Erie Railroad, the Board of Public Utilities Commission held that there is no more obvious case of police power than grade crossings. We believe that this is a safety issue, and we would ask the court to analyze it under the FRSA, but I will yield to Mr. Keller for a more in-depth discussion should the court determine that the ICCTA is the proper remedy.
Thank you.
Mr. Keller.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. This is a complicated case, but I think you can reduce the core analysis down to 3 points. First, it's the Safety Act, not the Termination Act, that governs preemption for laws related to railroad safety. Second, Ohio statute is a law related to railroad safety, as the federal law is using that phrase. Third, under the Safety Act, and particularly the first safe harbor, the secretary has not covered this area, this subject matter, because as everyone in this case seems to agree, there is no federal regulation that governs how long a parked train can block the road. So I want to touch on those three steps, but before I do, a few threshold points. I think we need to be careful about what analysis we're performing here. This is an express preemption case. There have been a lot of questions about the practicalities, but we're not at a dormant, we don't have a developed dormant commerce clause challenge where we're weighing the burden on the railroad versus the safety interests at stake. Those types of cases require factual records, and we don't have a developed point here. We also aren't, this is not also a conflict preemption case. So if we're worried about the relationship between air brakes and Ohio's law, I would argue there's a good argument that that's wholly beyond the railroad's control to begin with, so there might not even be a violation, but that's an analysis for a later stage in the case. Another threshold point is just a basic principle of federalism. We don't have a US Supreme Court case on point, so it is this court's job to come up with the right answer, and if reaching the right answer means splitting from non-binding authority, well, that's why we have a US Supreme Court to resolve disputes about federal law. And then I would also emphasize what I'll call the federalism canon, that when you have a traditional area of state authority, you have to come to the statutory language against that backdrop. Congress doesn't hide elephants in mouse holes, so we don't expect it to be making large changes to the federal state structure in opaque ways or unclear ways. Going to the steps, I'm not sure I'll have time to get through all of them, so I do want to direct the court to the Tyrell decision out of the Sixth Circuit, because if you're looking for a sample as to what we think this court's analysis should look like, Judge Seiler's opinion in Tyrell does a near perfect analysis of these three steps. The first thing we need to do is sort out the relationship between the Safety Act and the Termination Act. And the danger here is if you read that Termination Act preemption clause about rail transportation as broadly as the railroad wants you to, you are going to be swallowing massive portions, if not the whole, of the Railroad Safety Act. And we try to avoid implied repeals like that whenever possible, and it is very possible to do here, and it's by reading the Safety Act for laws related to railroad safety operates as an exception to the normally broad preemptive coverage.
So help me understand why this is a law related to railroad safety.
Absolutely, Your Honor. I think that's the second step here, and related to railroad safety is admittedly a tricky phrase, and I don't probably have a good bright line rule that's going to reach every case, but here I think we can be comfortable that we're within the margins, because at the very least, if you look at the statutory text, it covers safety concerns that are caused or created by the railroad's operations. And we know that from the 20101 provision that is, it's a codified purpose statement, but in essence, it is a definition of railroad safety. And that says that what we're trying to get at here is safety in every area of railroad operations. So if we have a safety concern that's actually caused by the railroad, which I think no one disputes here, we are comfortably within the margins of that. I would also point out to the court, obviously we're asking the court to reach different outcomes than a lot of these cases, but a lot of cases have held that anti-blocking statutes are laws related to railroad safety. Illinois Supreme Court in the Village of Mundelein case did, and Sixth Circuit in Plymouth and the Pennsylvania Supreme Court in Krentz also analyzed these laws as laws related to railroad safety. I do want to touch on the third step, which is actually applying the Safety Act, and I'd like to focus my time on the first safe harbor. Just to reground us in the text, what we're asking there is whether the Secretary has issued regulation, prescribed regulations or issued generally applicable orders that cover the subject matter. Railroad has been unable to point to any. I know they say we could lobby or petition the federal government for a solution, but that's gets the default of the first safe harbor exactly backwards. Until the federal government actively steps in, it is the states that get to regulate.
Well,
and I wanna,
let me ask you this. Well, I mean, maybe there's a federal policy here that they're not gonna stop railroads from blocking crossings. I mean, I don't know how you would expect the federal government to write a regulation that says it's okay. So I mean, what would a regulation you think look like that would cover this subject matter?
Sure, Your Honor. The first safe harbor does require the federal government to actually act. You can't infer that they think it's okay from silence. Now, if the federal government does make a policy decision that they think it's okay to block the roads, they could write a permissive regulation that sets either a very long time frame or says there are no limits on how long the train can block the roads. And then we might still have a debate about the second safe harbor, but I think our first safe harbor argument would be done. I see that my time's up. If I might just make a few quick points about the railroads argument.
All right, you may take a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. Two quick points. First, there is no limiting principle to the railroads argument. This case is not about something like, well, is 5 minutes too stringent? They're seeking to wipe states completely off the board. The second point would be that if you look at the railroads argument, they don't have a good answer for how these laws are interacting. I know for the first time today in argument, we heard this distinction, I'm not sure I understood it, but between operation and licensing, I guess was the attempted distinction, but that has no basis in the text. What the text says is that the Safety Act covers laws related to railroad safety. And as I argued, I think we're in that pocket here. So with that said, we'd ask the court to affirm, and more specifically, we'd ask the court to hold that there is no express preemption of Ohio's law here. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Tober, you've used your time. You may take a minute. You'll have to turn your mic on.
Thank you, Your Honor. Addressing the last point first about the text of the statute, the text of ICTA is clear. ICTA expressly states that it preempts not only state law, but federal law. The Attorney General simply does not confront the statutory language. As for the FRSA, even if the state gets past the first hurdle on the ground that the FRA has not issued a regulation specifically covering blocked crossings, it still must satisfy each and every prong of the three prongs of the local safety hazard exception, and it cannot satisfy any of those prongs, let alone each of those prongs.
Isn't that an either or? The way the statute is written, either you satisfy the first safe harbor or the second one?
I guess that may be a fair point, Your Honor, but I'd go back to the first. It's simply not the case that they satisfy the first safe harbor. The federal regulations say we must remain stopped after switching until we conduct tests. federal law also says we must stop and switch at the Honda plant because we're a common carrier. We're obligated to stop at the plant, we're obligated to switch at the plant, and we're obligated to conduct air brake tests after we switch and before we move. Federal law requires us to stop and stay stopped until we've conducted those tests.
But there's nothing in the record that shows that federal law requires that you stop in front of a crossing. I don't have any idea what the setup is at the Marysville plant. I don't know whether to unload or load, you have to stop in front of the crossing.
Absolutely. There is no way, there is literally no way to conduct the switching activities at the plant without blocking the crossing.
How do we know that on this motion to dismiss?
I mean, it's not disputed. You can take judicial notice of the maps of the area.
To go out there and take judicial notice, figure out how long the trains are, and figure out
Your Honor, I mean, it's not in the record because it's simply not disputed. But again, the specific facts don't matter here. We're talking under ICTA, categorical preemption, in which the case law is clear that when a state attempts to regulate the use of tracks, that is categorically preempted by ICTA. Factual development simply is not necessary.
Counsel?
Yes.
It's been 100 years since Erie and police power issue.
Yeah.
And the secretary hasn't issued any regs about anti-blocking laws, and yet there's all these cases. Shouldn't we take that to mean states are okay to do anti-blocking laws?
No, quite the contrary. All these cases have held that states may not enforce
anti-blocking. I'm asking the fact the secretary hasn't issued a specific reg about the anti-blocking issue for 100 years.
Several things, Your Honor. It's not necessary. United States Supreme Court in Easterwood made clear that the question is not why has the secretary adopted a regulation, nor what the target of the regulation is. The question is, what is the effect of that regulation? Because in Easterwood, the plaintiff there argued that the secretary had not issued a regulation specifically governing speed at grade crossings. The plaintiff correctly pointed out that the speed regulations that the FRA had issued were designed to prevent derailments and were not designed to prevent collisions at grade crossings. The Supreme Court says it does not matter why the secretary adopted regulations. The fact is, in effect, they cover this subject matter because it has an effect on the same matter as the state regulation would. And so to here, the mere fact that the air brake testing regulations are not designed to address blocked crossings does not mean that they do not address blocked crossings. In fact, they compel blocked crossings by the duty to serve localities and then to conduct brake testing after switching cars at those industrial customers.
But in response to the fact that, as you said earlier, the only thing that's undisputed, this is a switching issue. It's not an air brake issue. It's not a speeding issue. It's the switching that occurred at Honda that's at issue.
Yeah, right? But I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Correct? That's what you said.
Well, yes, but we shouldn't be, but at the same time, I want to be clear that though this case arises from citations issued outside the Honda plant in Marysville, this is a statewide issue. Indeed, this is a statewide statute, and there are over 5,000 crossings. And so we're talking about the situation of this one locale, but it can occur elsewhere. And that underscores the fact that this is a statewide statute, underscores why the state is unable to satisfy the local hazard exception under the FRSA. It is clear from congressional legislative history, as well as the court decisions interpreting the FRSA, that a statewide rule is by definition not something addressing a local safety hazard.
So is that your strongest argument in response to Justice DeWine and Justice Fisher, that it's subsection A of 49 USC 20106, that it's the elimination or reduce any essentially a local safety or security hazard?
Yeah,
that they've actually already regulated. I've heard two things from you.
I'm not going to pick between my children, Your Honor. I love them both. It is both the case that the FRA has regulated when trains must stop and remain stopped. And it is also the case that block crossings are not an essentially local hazard. They are across the country, across Ohio, across Union County. They are everywhere. They're simply not a local hazard.
Thank you, counsel. We will take the matter under advisement and you'll be notified of our decision. Thank you all.
Thank you, Your Honor.